previous lead developer and maintainer of the Monero, the world's most privacy cryptocurrency, a household name for anyone who uses crypto. I want to just give thanks that we have his work and we have him back in our digital community, and I want to welcome him back to the stage. Fluffy Pony, come on.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome, take it away.
Cool. Well, it's great to be back. Sadly, my legal stuff is still ongoing, so can't take credit for that just yet. But it's one of those things where when you're building interesting tech, then you attract interesting attention. So today I'm going to speak a little bit about Monero. The title of my talk is Monero, the world's least professional cryptocurrency, and why that's a good thing. And the reason I came up with this title is because I have often seen accusations leveraged against Monero, excuse me, that it's not professional enough. And initially, I didn't, quite understand what people were looking for, the people that were sort of throwing these accusations around. And then eventually I realized that they wanted to see structures that they were used to. They were used to banks, and they were used to financial projects like PayPal and Venmo and Cash App. And they wanted to see similar structures in crypto. And when they didn't, then it was weird to them, and they sort of like pushed back against that. And I really want to sort of hone in on what makes Monero special and why not being professional as a cryptocurrency is actually a good thing. So I do have some slides. I'm not sure if we're able to show them. Look at that. Amazing. So as mentioned earlier, my name is Ricardo Spagni. Many people know me as Fluffy Pony. I'm going to sort of, give a little bit of an overview on Monero, a little bit of background for me. I'm part of the Monero core team, which is largely meaningless, and I'll explain why it's largely meaningless soon. I also co-founded Tari Labs and Yat, as well as My Monero, which is a Monero wallet. So today I'm going to give a brief primer on Monero. I'm also going to talk a little bit about what makes Monero interesting from a non-technical perspective, because of course Monero is very interesting from a technical perspective, but there's other special things about it. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about Monero's people and structure, and how Monero is decentralized by design, the challenges that that creates, and why we continue to persist. So what Monero is and does, because there seems to be plenty of confusion about what Monero is and does. I think that that's probably not a bad thing. It is a deeply technical project, and of course there's going to be a natural amount of confusion. When it comes to privacy enhancing projects, and to, for those who aren't aware, Monero is a privacy enhancing project, or privacy enhancing technology. It's what we call a PET, which is not a dog. A PET is a privacy enhancing technology, hence the acronym. Monero's specific area of privacy that it focuses on is financial privacy. And there really are five aspects to cryptocurrency, to any privacy enhancing cryptocurrency. And I'm gonna really drill down into them. And the first one is, at least from Monero's perspective, is unlinkability. So we want to hide where transactions are going to. The next aspect is untraceability. We want to hide where transactions are coming from, so who's making the payments. Then we want them to be cryptographically valueless, so we want to hide transaction amounts. Fourthly, we want to do a little bit of hiding against adversaries that are trying to find out the originating IP address. And then the last thing is optionality. So we want to maximize the privacy set. And that sort of goes into the next section, because it's kind of non-technical, but I think it's an important part nonetheless. So let's start with the first one, unlinkability. So, I don't want to bore everyone with like deeply technical details, but the way that Monero works from an unlinkability perspective is that for outgoing transactions, you can't prove that they're sent to the same person. So this is an example Monero transaction. Obviously, it's totally made up. You've got transaction inputs and outputs. So inputs are like money that we're spending, and outputs are who it's going to. And you can see that these outputs look like they're going to these weird little things, which look maybe like Bitcoin addresses, but they're not really. If we go to the next slide, you'll notice that some of them are highlighted in red. And the reason for that is just to demonstrate that even though these addresses, which in Monero are actually just transaction output destinations, are going to the same address, there's no way to tell. So they're cryptographically unlinkable. There's no way to tell where a transaction is going to, who's being paid. It just goes to a random destination, even if multiple outputs in the same transaction are going to the same person. Now let's talk about cryptographically untraceable. So when it comes to untraceability, we want to not be able to figure out who's making the payment. So the way we do that in Monero is using something called ring signatures. So you can see here we're spending 1,000 Monero, which you know, of course is a large amount of money, but you know clearly I'm living the dream by pretending that I can spend 1,000 Monero. And what we've done is we've gone and chosen random outputs on the blockchain. And this is important because these outputs are from very long ago, all the way up to more recent outputs. We've created this thing called a ring signature. The little one in red is the real signer. So that's the real output that we're spending. The rest are just part of the ring signature. You'll notice that there's this little thing called a key image. And that key image is just a magic little cryptographic trick, which is used to uniquely identify the fact that we are spending the little red output, but it isn't something that can be reversed. So it's almost like a hash function that you can't reverse it and go figure it out. Now, ring signatures get a lot of flack, and that's for good reason, because actually this is the hardest part. This is like the weakest part of Monero's privacy enhancement. And the reason for that is because we're trying to hide what we call the transaction graph. So the flow of transactions, and I'm sure you, if you've ever delved into like Bitcoin or Ethereum, you've maybe seen those little graphs that they do where they show the flow of stolen money and they show that it went from this address to that address and then exploded out to 78 million other addresses. And it was consolidated in this 300th different address. And so this part is like genuinely hard because we're dealing with data that is inherently public. Now, because this data is on a blockchain and it's inherently public, that's not a bad thing. As I'm sure we're very well aware, and as other speakers have alluded to and spoken about, we live in a very adversarial environment on the internet. And there are plenty of organizations that are sniffing up all sorts of information. So the fact that this information lives on a blockchain and thousands of computers around the world agree on the information doesn't make it inherently bad. It just means that everyone has access to it instead of, you know, a handful of malicious organizations or devious organizations. Now, I'm not going to go into great detail here, but what I will point out is that one of the biggest issues with this is that people have a tendency to receive funds and then spend them pretty quickly or pretty, you know, maybe almost frequently. And so there were a bunch of weaknesses that were discovered way back in November 2014 around how we were choosing outputs. And so then we switched to this triangular distribution. Then we had this like recent output cut in. And then we created this thing called Ring CT, which I'm going to talk about next. But it still isn't really enough. The challenge is that these ring signatures are relatively small. For a long time, they were under 10, and we allowed variable ring sizes, and then we sort of fixed them under 10. And now we've increased the ring size over time. But the reality is that on a per-transaction basis, it's still relatively small. We need to have much larger ring sizes. That's challenging because larger ring sizes mean larger transaction sizes. And when I speak about larger transaction sizes, I mean like physically, the number of bytes that it takes that get stored in the blockchain that get broadcast out over the internet. There is an improvement, a cryptographic improvement called Triptych. which is coming, and that allows for a logarithmic increase in ring sizes. And so what that means is when you make the jump from, say, 10 to 20 from a ring size perspective, you're linearly increasing the size of the transaction. So it sort of goes up in this line. And logarithmic means that you can sort of go up in this sweeping upward sort of curve, which means we can have much larger ring sizes. So instead of, you know, the sort of 16 or like sub 20 that we're currently at, we can start to play around with ring sizes that are like 128, 256 and larger. And that, of course, is fantastic for privacy. So this is, and I think it's important to be very specific about the fact that this is the weakest part of Monero's privacy. Let's hop on to the next one, though, which is that Monero is cryptographically valueless. And I alluded to this earlier when I spoke about RingCT. And so previously with Monero, we used to have to specify transaction amounts in a very visible way. And with the advent of RingCT many years ago, excuse me, this is a couple of years after Monero's launch in 2014, then we added this thing called RingCT, which is based on this thing called confidential transactions, which was initially invented for Bitcoin, but has still not been applied to Bitcoin. And RingCT is just using ring signatures applying confidential transactions to ring signatures, signing this difference between these things called commitments. And a commitment is, instead of including an actual value, you commit to a value. And then you do this clever little thing where you perform a bunch of arithmetic with commitments. You can't determine the actual value, but what you can determine is that no new amounts are being created out of thin air. And that's obviously critical because we don't want Monero being created out of thin air. It is, after all, a financial system. You'll have to excuse my coughing. So let's move on to the fourth aspect, and that is being passively hidden. Now, this is something that to date has not really formed a massive part of sort of chain analysis or blockchain analysis organizations, law enforcement and so on. They haven't really focused on things like Sybil attacks and passive surveillance against transaction broadcasts to try and figure out the IP address. Because you can imagine if you know that there's a transaction that's happened and you can figure out the IP address of the node that broadcast it, well, that's bad. So you can see in this scenario that this is my node in green, and then the gray ones are other nodes on the network. And then these red nodes are logging nodes. And these are nodes that are logging all of the transactions that they get, exactly what time they get those transactions down to the millisecond. Their times are synced, and they obviously store the IP address of the node that broadcasts it. So in this example, I'm sending a transaction, and the way I do that is by using something called Floodful. This is the way that transactions are broadcast on Monero. This is, or used to be broadcast on Monero. This is the way that transactions are broadcast on Bitcoin, Ethereum, and pretty much every other cryptocurrency out there. In fact, I think Monero stands almost unique in caring about this. And you can see that because I'm flood filling the network, I'm broadcasting to the nodes that I'm peered to, the nodes that I'm connected to, that little red logging node is one of the first nodes to receive my transaction. And as a result, can determine that this transaction likely came from my IP address, because that was the first transaction or the first node that it saw the transaction from. And that's obviously bad. So there's a thing called Dandelion++. Again, a technology originally invented for Bitcoin, like confidential transactions. We have a lot to thank Bitcoin for because it is the focal point, the center of attention when it comes to a lot of interesting research. Monero is picking a lot of that up, but it was originally this thing called BIP156, which is a Bitcoin improvement protocol. And then Dandelion++ was an improvement by the original authors. So the way it works is when I'm broadcasting a transaction, it's like a dandelion. There's a stem and a fluff phase. And so the stem phase is I broadcast it to one node. And then that node, and I pick the node at random from the nodes I'm connected to, that node will then broadcast it to the nodes it's connected to. And that's the fluff phase. And if you don't know what a dandelion is, it's that little plant where it's got like, you know, little fluffy things on top and like a big round white ball. And you often see it in, you know, very emotional movies where someone's holding the little dandelion and they blow and all the little things go flying out into the universe. Now, as a result of the stem and fluff phase, no one can determine what happened in the stem phase. And so from the logging node's perspective, they think that this transaction was first seen from this little gray node over here. It wasn't from my node. And so as a result, we're able to defeat passive surveillance. And this is baked into every single Monero node. It's not the sort of thing that you can disable. Of course, you can still use Tor, you can still use I2P, but this is an important part of privacy that is largely ignored. Now, I want to talk about the fifth aspect, and that is the non-technical aspects to privacy enhancement. And this is super important because a lot of projects, and I've seen a lot of arguments on Twitter about which privacy coin is best, and they often focus on the technical. They focus on the hyper-specific, like on a per-transaction basis, how private is it from a cryptographic perspective. They ignore things like robustness, and they certainly ignore things like these non-technical privacy elements. And so let's talk about one, and that's mandatory privacy. Now, what does it matter? Like if not everyone needs privacy, why does it need to be mandatory? Why can't it just be optional? So I want you to imagine a project where you have this blockchain and then you have this magical cloud of privacy that's attached. And maybe it's a layer two. Maybe it's magical privacy cloud on Lightning. Maybe it's magical privacy cloud that's attached to the blockchain on a base layer. Doesn't matter. But imagine there's this magical cloud of privacy. Now let's imagine you have 100,000 users. And of those 100,000 users, 1,000 of them are using your magical cloud of privacy. Now, what we're effectively doing by having this magical cloud of optional privacy is we're restricting the anonymity set to those 1,000 users at best. And once you start adding in timing analysis and stuff like that, well, you're actually restricting it to a lot less than 1,000 users. You're probably restricting it to like 10. And as I'm sure you can imagine, if you're an attacker, all you need to do is go round up those 10 people and beat them until one of them admits to having done the bad transaction or the transaction that you think is bad that nobody else does. And so, of course, mandatory privacy is this critical fifth element. But I want to talk about a sixth element that I didn't mention on my slide, and this is ideology. Now, this applies to Monero, and it applies to every other privacy project. Now, Monero contributors, and when I say contributors, I, of course, largely mean people who are developing code for Monero, but it could also mean people who are part of the larger ecosystem, people who are developing projects that are attached to the Monero project in some way, provide additional functionality, maybe it's a wallet, whatever it is. Now, when it comes to Monero contributors and the ideology that that is espoused amongst Monero contributors know four things. We know that our code is responsible for securing people's money. I think that's fairly obvious. But we also know that our code may be required to protect someone's life savings. And so, you can be pragmatic and you can say to people, don't put all your money in Monero. It's a bad idea. Everything could collapse tomorrow. Just be responsible. Not everyone's going to listen to that. And some people might have an obligation or a need or a requirement to put their entire life savings into something as privacy enhancing like Monero. And you can't judge that and you can't begrudge that. And so our code needs to be robust enough to protect that. But the third thing is that our code might be needed or might need to keep an innocent person out of jail. And this, of course, becomes a bit of a sensitive topic because there are a lot of people that believe that privacy is something that you don't really need. And I'm not going to delve into why privacy is important because I think everyone listening to this talk probably believes that privacy is generally a good thing. What I will say is that privacy is something that you probably don't know you need until it's too late. And that is an unfortunate thing. And so we've seen in the past so often that people get caught up in dragnets. They get caught up in, sometimes very well-intentioned law enforcement agencies that are trying to go after legitimately bad people And as a result, they end up sweeping a bunch of innocent people along with it. And it's kind of like those boats that go out to sea and they're fishing and they cast this net behind the boat and then they just pull up a bunch of fish. And along with that, they pull up dolphins and all sorts of other things. And sometimes you've got, you know, innocent sea creatures, or not innocent, they're all innocent, I guess. But you've got sea creatures that are not intended as food that get caught up in this and end up dying. And that's kind of hectic when it's a human life that ends up in the balance, when it's somebody who ends up going to jail for something that they might not have done. And they are in some sort of pretrial detention waiting for a judge to look at their case and say, oh, actually, you're innocent. The scars from that, the mental and emotional toil that it takes is something that sometimes people don't ever get over. And so our code needs to be secure, private, and robust enough to keep an innocent person out of jail. But the fourth thing is that our code might be the difference between life or death. And this is something that I know keeps a lot of Monero contributors up at night. You know, they sit and they think carefully about things that they're submitting to the project. They sit and they think carefully about the ramifications and the repercussions of things that they're building out. And I've seen a lot of discussions where users want certain aspects of Monero's development to move faster and contributors push back on it because they understand that secure, robust, private, privacy-enhancing code takes time. And so those four things are so critical. And I would argue that any privacy-enhancing project, whether it is a privacy-enhancing cryptocurrency, a privacy-enhancing messenger, any privacy-enhancing project that treats their work with less care, frankly, is not only irresponsible, but is indistinguishable from a scam. And that is something that I think is pretty critical. Now, I want to talk about Monero's people and structure because I think that, you know, there's often a confusion about how Monero started. You know, there's the meme that goes around, not meme, but, you know, there's sometimes the misattribution that goes around that I created Monero. I did not. Monero was launched by this guy called Thankful for Today in April 2014. And initially, it was just a fair launch of the crypto node reference implementation. Obviously, many years past that, and so it's significantly changed. But there's this interesting thing that happened, and that was Thankful for Today refused to listen to the community. The community had some ideas about certain things that they wanted done. He had other ideas about things that he wanted done. When he refused to listen to the community, then he was promptly ejected. And so seven members of the core team, myself included, forked the project. So we forked the actual code. The Monero blockchain wasn't forked. That continued. And there were these two implementations. There was BitMonero, which was created by and launched by Thankful for Today. And then there was Monero, which was our little fork of the code. And these two implementations ran in parallel for about a year before BitMonero stopped being able to sync up with the blockchain. And today, our role as the core team is just stewardship. So control certain things that cannot be decentralized or distributed, things like the GitHub repository, things like the domains. There's no way to decentralize these things, or at least not yet. I mean, of course, you know, who knows what the future holds. But we are stewards, and our position is relative. If Thankful for Today was ousted by because he didn't listen to the community, well, we can be ousted too. So let's talk about some of the other aspects or other people in the Monero community. We have contributors to Monero. Those are developers. We have the Monero community that work on related projects. They operate things like the social media channels, you know, whether it's Telegram or IRC or whatever. They also focus on things like user assistance. So we have a fantastic Stack Exchange for Monero where people can ask pretty deep questions. We also have, of course, the Monero subreddit where a lot of people go and get help. And then things like the Telegram group and, you know, so on and so forth. Work group operators and participants. So we have these self-assembling work groups. So as an example of that, we have the vulnerability response work group, which reacts to vulnerabilities that are found in Monero software. We have meetup work groups all over the world. Those are self-assembling. They go and figure out like, oh, hey, wouldn't it be cool if there was a meetup in this particular area or city? They're entirely independent and self-assembling. The malware response work group focuses on helping organizations and people who are affected by Monero mining malware, helping them to figure out how to remove it from their computers, and how to, you know, contact the mining pool operator, and so on. But now, of course, you know, as you can imagine, oh, and then I nearly forgot the Monero Research Lab, which is another self-assembling work group, and that is a group of cryptographers and academics that focus on research around Monero. Now, as you can imagine, this is a group of people. Now, how do you decentralize people? I mean, decentralizing code is one thing because you've got Git and, you know, GitHub, GitLab, all these different places you can store Git repositories. But how do you decentralize people? So you've got this big group of people in various little clusters. And this leads to two challenges. There's the challenge of personalities, and there is the challenge of paying the bills. So the challenge of personalities, let's start with that one. The challenge of personalities is one where you have to work with people who are unpaid, and you know, if you don't like them, well, you can't just assassinate them with someone you hired on a darknet market. You actually have to deal with them. And the way that we try and do it within the Monero community is we encourage mutual respect. So, you know, it doesn't always work, but at least it's encouraged. We try and do nearly nothing in isolation, so that, you know, to the extent that it's possible, as many people are involved in decision making and in building things, whatever they are, as can be. We openly discuss the problem child. So where somebody is being a bit of a problem child, then you'll often notice it gets discussed in very open forums, you know, big open discussions on Reddit, on the Monero Meta, GitHub, and that sort of thing. We encourage those that are unsatisfied with the project to kindly fork off. And, you know, I say that as a pun, but what I mean by that is if they don't like the way Monero works, they can fork the code, they can fork the project, they can build whatever they want. There have been attempts at doing this in the past. They've not survived because at the end of the day, the Monero community, whilst not homogenized over much, we tend to agree that Monero has a fairly, you know, unified path in the future, and that is to enhance privacy. And the last thing is don't limit platforms. So, you know, people can and have set up uncensored subreddits, you know, multiple Telegram groups and so on. And we are happy as a community, and I don't mean like we as in me or as in the contributors or as in the core team, but we as a community are happy for people to talk about things on whatever platform they feel most comfortable. Then there's the challenge of paying the bills. So, you know, most of us are not crypto-rich driving Lambos. And so how does somebody who wants to contribute to Monero pay the bills? So there's two real ways. There's donations and crowdfunding, and there's corporate sponsors. So under donations and crowdfunding, what's unique about Monero is we have something called the CCS, which is a community crowdfunding system. And basically the way it works is anyone can pitch up, they can post an idea on the CCS, they can say how long it's going to take them, how they're going to accomplish this feature, what it's going to cost, and then they can raise Monero from the community, and the Monero gets paid out once they hit milestones. So they don't just get it up front. You know, maybe they say this is a feature that I'm going to build and it's going to take me 2 months and I want to get paid half at month one once I've developed a certain part of it, and half at the end of month two once I've developed the other half. And so if they disappear halfway through, somebody can pitch up and continue working on it and get paid the other half, which has happened in the past. And then we have corporate sponsors, you know, which are obviously largely like Monero adjacent organizations that help cover things like the server, or the servers rather, that host the Monero website and so on. And so the company I co-founded, Tari Labs, pays for the CDN as an example, which is used to distribute the Monero software. And the CDN we use is expensive but very cool because they have a bunch of servers behind China's Great Firewall. And so that means that even in places like China, where they might choose to block Monero at the Great Firewall level, The CDN will still serve Monero software internally within China, which is kind of special and unique. Now, why do we bother with decentralization? As opposed to just like build, you know, moving fast and breaking things and just being like having a Monero foundation or having, you know, a core group of like 20 Monero developers that get paid a salary from, I don't know, like Monero mining rewards or something. And that's not to say that, you know, stuff like that is a bad model, but the basic goals of decentralization as it applies to Monero is that nobody should ever be able to control the network. And that means that it needs to be as decentralized as possible. Nobody should ever be able to easily introduce a backdoor. That doesn't mean they can't try, but it should be caught in the path of merging and deploying things. No single person should mean the life or death of the project. And at the end of the day, users depend on us getting this right. Now, when I say no single person should mean the life or death of the project, I mean that quite literally. I'm the former lead maintainer of Monero. I'm on the Monero core team. I no longer have write access to the Monero GitHub repository. And that's very important because it means that I can be hit by a bus tomorrow and I'm entirely irrelevant to the project. If I want to contribute and I want to add a feature to Monero, I need to pitch up, have a discussion, write the code and submit it just like everyone else. I don't have any special privilege. I just have the privilege of history. And the last aspect is that the project should be respected despite the people involved. And sometimes I've seen projects take both criticism and compliment as a result of Euro worship, as a result of prickly personalities. You know, maybe like the person that is spearheading it or, you know, like the leader of the project or the founder or whatever is a very likable person, very affable. And so as a result, or maybe he's very nerdy, you know, he like wears glasses and plays chess or, I don't know, plays Counter-Strike or something and, you know, defrauds people for billions of dollars. And as a result, you know, there's all of this respect and trust that is heaped on them, which is ridiculous. At the same time, you get the opposite where somebody is just like not that likable as a person. And so the fact that they write good code or the fact that they are incredibly gifted is irrelevant because like they need to be likable. You know, they need to either be a classic closeted nerd sitting in their mom's basement or they need to be just like very likable. And there's no in between. And I think that both of those extremes are invalid. I think that what's really important is that the project should stand on its own and the project should garner respect because of what it accomplishes and what it does, not because of people involved, but despite the people involved. So I take it as a mark of great accord and great privilege and great respect when people complain about me. Fantastic. Let them complain about me and let them like Monero. Let them complain about other Monero contributors, but like Monero nonetheless. Or hate Monero. That's their loss. So ungovernance best practices, how do you ungovern a project? How do you keep a project decentralized despite not having central governance structures? And so there are a couple of principles, and this is really just stuff that I've learned over the years with Monero and others, other open source projects. The first is educate. Don't keep knowledge to yourself. You're not you're not Harry Potter. You're not the wizard that knows things. Welcome newcomers and make them useful. Not make them feel useful, make them useful. And that means if they do something small, of course, praise them, but give them the guidance and direction so that they can do bigger things. Make sure other people know how to do your job. When I started stepping back, and this is linked to the next one, which is hand over responsibilities to others. When I started stepping back as lead maintainer and handing those responsibilities over to others, I had to make sure people knew how to do my job. I had to make sure people knew how to build and deploy a Monero release. They could not rely on me. Otherwise, I'd just be the bus factor. Sometimes you need to do less to give others a chance. There was a period of time in Monero's early history where I was taking on tons of responsibilities because nobody else was able to or available to. And as a result, it ended up with like the buck stopping here quite often. And so I needed to actually stop being a yes man and hand things off to other people and just be like, hey, you can do this, right? Give them a chance and then help them when they make mistakes, if they make mistakes. The next is just don't ever think you're irreplaceable. I see a lot of people that are involved in open source projects holding on. They're just like gripping this thing with their talons because this is their little area that they exercise a little bit of power, and they just, you know, they'll do everything to retain that power, and it ends up being a total mess. It ends up driving contributors away. It ends up driving the community away. You're not irreplaceable. And the last thing is always highlight the efforts of others. And that's sort of the last point that I'll really make in this talk, and that is Monero would not be where it is today were it not for the contributions of literally thousands of people, if not tens of thousands of people. My role in Monero's history often gets a lot of credit, a lot of sort of, you know, public credit. And I think that that's a little bit sad because there are so many people who have just been an integral part of Monero's early history and people who are no longer with us. There are contributors to Monero who've passed away. They are, but obviously, you know, structurally important to like the code that we're running all over the world in Monero nodes. And there are people who have done way more than I've ever done with regards to Monero's code base, Monero's community, helping new users. I really can't take much credit. And whilst I, you know, deeply appreciate being a part of Monero's history, I want to just give a massive shout out to all of the people who've been a part of Monero's history, all of the people who've been around for a while, and the newcomers who pitch up and see things that they can do to help Monero. You know, everyone who's been involved in the Monero Research Lab, everyone who's been involved in the Monero Ecosystem Project, the Monero Outreach Project, anyone who's built anything that has touched Monero in some way, all of you are appreciated. You know, I think we need to continue to just give credit where credit is due. And that is to all of the people that have just made Monero what it is. And with that, I will thank everyone for listening to my long and rambly speech about why Monero is the world's least professional cryptocurrency, why that's important. If you do have any questions, I believe we're going to take some questions now. But beyond that, getmonero.org is the Monero website. There's, of course, a wealth of information there. Beyond that, the Monero Stack Exchange, the Monero subreddit, and you'll notice on the Monero website, there's links to a ton of community resources where you can get answers to all your questions.
Awesome. Give it up for Ricardo.
Are you sick of being told you will own nothing and be happy?
Are you sick of being told how to live your life by the mainstream media?
Exactly what people think, and this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Are you exhausted with the truth community, focusing only on the problems?
Are you ready to do something about it?
Let's take action together. Join the Freedom Cell Network in January 2023 as we return with the Greater Reset for co-creation.
The Greater Reset is a five-day in-person and online gathering where solutions-focused speakers and organizations share practical steps for individual and collective liberation.
This year, we'll even hear experiences from real communities on the ground across multiple continents.
The Greater Reset 4 will focus on activating five focus areas over 5 days.
January 18th, liberate your mind, body, and soul.
January 19th, permaculture and food independence.
January 20th, agorism and parallel networks.
January 21st, take back our tech.
January 22nd, building free and conscious communities.
This is our time to co-create the world we want for 2030 and beyond.
Join us as we lay the foundation for the next stage of a free humanity.
Join us from January 18th to the 22nd, 2023, as we gather online, in person in Central Texas and Morelia, Mexico.
Join us for the Greater Reset 4, co-creation.
View the full speakers list and organize your local activation hub at thegreaterreset.org.